You've got cell phones. Your students have cell phones. They're in your class. What's the best way to deal with distraction? Welcome to this episode of Your EdTech Questions. Amal.
Yeah.
Amal.
Zach?
Amal.
Zach?
Amal.
Zach?
Amal.
Hello?
Pay attention.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, hey.
Welcome to Your EdTech Questions. I'm Zach Chase.
And I'm Amal Gingness.
If I could just get her to pay attention. Amal, we're going to be talking in this episode about a little thing I call the distraction zone.
Ooh, Zach, this topic is very personal for me.
Also, I have to say that if we had any budget at all right now, we would have licensed a very specific Kenny Loggins song. But we don't, so just imagine it right now. Why is this an important topic for you, Amal?
This is something I think about all the time, both professionally and personally. I think with so many devices and so many notifications and dings and beeps and shiny things to look at and so many different spaces to access online, distraction is just kind of part of the way we engage. I think it's something I see in my students. It's something I see in myself. It's something I know I'm working on. It's something I know that my students are working on. It's just kind of a new way that we're all navigating being physically present.
If I were to watch you in a faculty meeting,
ooh, busted.
Would I see a completely focused teacher sitting attentively, contributing and listening to every speaker?
Oh man, I think the focus of our staff meetings has shifted because everyone has a laptop. It's actually become a norm where whoever is presenting will sometimes ask the entire room to close up screens so that we can all be physically present and think about something together without the distraction of screens. And you always have some rebels, you know, some people will take their phones out. Some people will slowly reopen their laptop and kind of get back into whatever they were doing. It's definitely something that I've noticed with the adults too.
Talking about this and listening to what you have to say makes me think that there's also some room for empathy in here as we think about our students.
Absolutely. It's really, really humbling when we realize we are not so different from them.
Also, I think it's maybe important for us to remember and recognize that students were not paying 100% attention to us before they had devices in the classroom.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And it's sometimes hard for us to remember that because for many of us who are a little bit older, we didn't really have devices in the classroom when we were students ourselves.
No, I had a fat little notebook that I passed notes back and forth with my friends Betsy. So that was my chat room.
I love it. I had the inside of those paper book covers on textbooks. Did you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We used to write all over those.
So rather than continuing this trip down memory lane, which I think would be incredibly revealing,
let's go
ahead and talk to somebody who's, yeah, another time. Somebody who's maybe a little bit smarter than us. That sound like a good idea?
That's always a good idea.
All right. Here we go.
Zach, why are you so down?
I want to learn about ed tech through professional learning, but I don't know where to go.
If only there was a path forward through ISTE. Wait, Zach, I have an answer for you.
What's the answer?
The answer is the very thing that brings us this episode. This episode is brought to you by ISTE Certification. It's a certification that can help pre-K through 12 educators rethink and redesign learning activities. With technology, you can engage students in real-world, authentic, active learning. And because it's learner-focused and pedagogy-based, ISTE Certification gives educators the tools they need to change classroom practice and improve student outcomes, no matter what tech they're using.
Where can I learn more? Tell me right now.
You can learn more at ISTE.org/certification.
I'll go there right now.
Yes.
Well, hello, Liz.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
I am great. So I'm with Liz Kolb, Clinical Associate Professor at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Liz, we have a question for you. Are you ready?
I am ready.
So it really just comes down to this. Cell phones are a distraction. What do we do about it? Let's parse that apart a little bit. So first of all, you've done quite a bit of research in this area. So what relevant research should educators know about this area?
Well, there's a lot of information that we know now that we didn't know about 10 years ago when I started looking at cell phones. And there's the first thing that educators we need to understand is that multitasking does not exist. And often when we think about cell phones and student devices and the new generation of students, the narrative tends to be students are great multitaskers and this generation can do things with technology in ways that adults cannot.
And I've heard that a lot from students when teachers ask them to put their devices away. Oh, miss, oh, mister, I can multitask.
Yes. And even, yes, even the students themselves believe that they can. But in actuality, the research continues to tell us multitasking is not something that anybody can do, no matter what age you are. And actually, in my classes with my student teachers who are very young, we do an experiment where I ask them on one hand to do, you know, rock, paper, scissors, and on the other hand to do a thumb war with a partner. And it's pretty much an impossible task if you try it. And we relate that to a lot of the research around multitasking and cell phones and students' devices, which has come out in the last couple of years, that has found that when students are distracted by having a device in front of them that's open, whether it's a laptop or their smartphone, that they're not able to really focus on the other information that's coming at them. So if they're listening to direct instruction from a lecture, or they're supposed to be participating in a classroom discussion and they have their device out, whether it's next to them, in their hands, or even kind of just in their backpack, it's still distracting them from the discussion and it's distracting their actual cognitive capacity to take in that information. Because if you think about it, Zach, if you have your cell phone sitting next to you, you're often thinking, maybe I should turn it over and just see if I have a message. Or maybe my husband is trying to contact me or my child. So I'm distracted by the idea that something could be happening on my device.
So this is a pretty bleak picture. It sounds like all of our cell phones should be thrown in the river. And we should just start talking to each other again.
Right.
Is that where this is headed? Does that research say turn everything off?
Well, what the research I think is pointing to is not so much turn everything off, but be really mindful about when you're choosing to have them on and available. So if we're in a classroom where we want to have a discussion and we want students to really be actively listening to each other and participating, it does not make a lot of sense to have cell phones in front of them, laptops open. Even the teacher should not have their devices out in order to really be actively listening and participating in discussion. So you don't have to ask people to repeat things five times. At the same time, if we are having a discussion and somebody asks a question that we don't know the answer to, and we know that we could go online and do some research and find it, that's a moment where the teacher can say, oh, let's pull out our devices and take 5 minutes to research this question, and then we'll come back together, put our devices away, and continue the discussion. So it's really become about kind of managing that.
So it sounds like you're saying that it's okay to have the device kind of out of arm's reach rather than just in the hall, so that it's there when necessary to help with their thinking. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. One of the things that we want to instill in our students is that our devices are more than entertainment devices and social devices. So we do want to be modeling to them how they can use it as information gathering tools, as educative tools, as tools for professional growth and development in their lives. And so by being mindful about how and when to use it, teachers can actually help to model that. So yes, we don't necessarily want to throw them out in the hallway and say, we're never going to use them. But we also want to be very aware that in the classroom, we shouldn't always be allowing students to have access just because they like them and just because they have them.
So what I would say, or what it would lead me to ask, is for the teacher who's lived in that cell phone free space, this feels like a pretty significant shift. So are there some things that you would say to that person about first steps that you would recommend kind of try this first?
Sure. I think there's some teachers doing some really smart things with managing the devices in their classrooms. I have some teacher friends who use kind of those kind of shoe pocket holders where they have the students put them in those pocket holders and they're numbered. And even one good friend of mine actually has kind of almost a bonus point system that she's instilled in her math class, where the students actually earn a few extra bonus points if they opt into putting their cell phones in these pocket protectors throughout the class day. And then they still do take them out sometimes to use them, but they're away from the students, so the students aren't distracted by what might be happening on their devices. And for this teacher, it's been really, really useful because one, it's opt-in, so it's allowing the students to kind of take control and responsibility over whether or not they have their device by them. But it's also easy for the teacher to kind of manage that. And she actually shows the students their grades and their growth throughout the first term, especially the students who choose not to opt in and want to have the cell phone with them. And many of those students actually see that they're not doing as well as they hoped they would do. And once they try putting their device in these kind of shoe protectors or shoe cubbies, they find that they're actually seeing better growth through not having their devices right next to them. So she's actually using it as an opportunity to teach students about regulating kind of their screen time. So it's a fairly non-threatening way to do it because it doesn't take a ton of management skills to just ask students to put them away from them for a little bit.
So the other piece that brings up for me then is what about classrooms where you're in a space that is already a one-to-one device to like, right? So schools that are providing students with devices, be it a tablet or a laptop or a Chromebook or any of those pieces. Is there no, it feels sometimes to me that, oh, this is kind of a hypocritical space to say, we're going to give you this device, but we don't want you to use that one. Are there research that says actually there's more value in this piece of technology than that one in those situations?
I think that's a good question. And I have not come across any research that says it's better to use a laptop over a smartphone versus an iPad or a tablet. I think it really isn't so much about the particular device anymore. It's really about how you're using it. So I think if you're in a classroom situation where it is one-to-one and every student has a laptop, there's a couple ways to approach that. One way is to consider that the students probably don't need to have their cell phones at all then for most of the activities you're going to be doing in the classroom. So maybe it makes sense to have some kind of management strategy where the cell phones are far away from the students as they are focused on work. I also would encourage teachers to not have the laptops in front of the students all the time, again, for the problems that we've seen in a lot of the multitasking research around that. At the same time, we do want students to be able to use what is at their disposal. So we know that students who are high needs and of lower incomes tend to not have access to a traditional desktop or laptop computer. And some schools that are one-to-one do not allow students to bring their devices home. So if the only device they have at home to do schoolwork or to do more educative type work and academic work is a cell phone or a smartphone, then we do want students to understand how to navigate that effectively for their world and their everyday life. So in the classroom with the one-to-one, maybe giving the students the option of you can either use the provided laptop or you can use your smart device when it's time to do the particular activities, whichever one is going to be more accessible to the students outside of school. Because we do know through research that the more we can connect school learning to their everyday lives, that the more effective the activities and the long-term cognitive growth will be with our students.
I want to go back to the component you talked about with teachers kind of saying, maybe this lives over here, not over here during this period. I guess I'm thinking about what the developmental needs are, right? So you and I probably have been in spaces with adults who can't stop looking at their phones. And largely, given my age, those are not folks who necessarily had a phone in front of them when they were in sixth or seventh grade. And so there was never really the conversation to say, or they went to schools where they were banned because they were, frightening and scary.
they never really got that. Here's how you manage yourself, that executive function component. So I guess my question would be, how do you start to build that, right? Because I think of it as kind of in the shoe holder pockets is a pretty extreme piece, right? And so as an adult, that's not an option that's available to me. How do we get kids to start develop those habits on their own?
I love this question. I think as adults, we have to recognize that we're not doing a very good job with this first. And as you mentioned, it's because many of us were not trained. So we kind of haphazardly are trying to figure it out. And we often kind of do the do as I say, not as I do approach with children and students. They see exactly what we're doing. And that includes in the classrooms with teachers. Many teachers do have their cell phones out throughout the entire class. Sometimes they're sharing on Twitter feeds or on Facebook. Sometimes they're doing things that are school related. Sometimes they're not. And the students see that and they're very aware of that. So step one is teachers need to be a model. They need to say, you know what, during class, I put my device away because it's distracting to me and I need to have my attention focused on you. I need to respect the people that are in the room. And if I need to use it for something academic, I'll let you know that I'm going to take it out and use it for something school related.
And that sounds like one of the best steps is just having a conversation with students, right? To be able to say to them, why would we want this device and why would we not want this device? I mean, that's the first start is saying that as a person in the room, right? But then also opening that up to students.
Absolutely. It's a conversation and not a one-time talk also. So it should be a conversation that's happening all year and making students aware of the research around mental health issues and screen time and the fact that if you are a middle schooler and you have a cell phone, you actually don't have that self-regulation or, as you were saying, the executive function to know how to have impulse control and to stop. And making students aware that this is something that they're going to struggle with and that is maybe why, you know, we are trying to help them by having, you know, the phone holders in the room or giving them reminders. But a conversation is a really important part of teaching students kind of these digital literacy and mindfulness skills. And I have found I work with middle schoolers a lot is that they want to have these conversations and they're not aware about the mental health issues that they can get into. They're not aware of what's happening to their brain. And so it is really important that as teachers, we're having the conversations, we're being very honest with them, but we're also modeling what we want the students to do because it's hard for us too.
So what would be some red flags of practice that you've seen where educators just kind of what they're doing, maybe well-intended, but kind of goes against what we know about the brain and how it operates and the research that we have around learning as well?
I think there's a couple of things. I think one of the first red flags is this idea that students should have access to their devices all the time because they're part of this digital tech-savvy generation. And you can't regulate that for them. I think many teachers feel intimidated by the devices in the classroom and they're frustrated by them, but they often don't take the time to actually have the conversation with students and make some guidelines for the classroom around use and having the students really think through those. So teachers should feel free to regulate devices that are in their classroom. The second thing is teachers aren't often and schools aren't often talking to parents, and parents are just as confused and frustrated as teachers are about how to harness this energy around devices. I rarely see a school give parents information around research and mental health issues and screen time with devices. I rarely see schools have real conversations with parents around when they think it's most appropriate for them to give their child a cell phone. Many schools say, well, it's not our decision, it's the parents' decision. And of course it is. But there's nothing wrong with having a conversation and sending information home to parents saying, you know, actually, we don't use cell phones in sixth or seventh grade for any academic purposes. We have devices in the school. So the students don't need to have a cell phone for academic purposes in our school. You know, we would recommend, you know, waiting. And here's the reasons, because there's some research around this. I think that it's important to bring parents into the conversation rather than assuming that parents don't want to be part of the conversation, or assuming that parents want their child to have devices and access to them all the time in schools.
And are there resources where you would point schools who are looking to start having this conversation to say, oh, here are some ways to communicate these pieces with families?
Right. I mean, I think Common Sense Media has some good resources. There's also Deborah Heitner. She wrote a book on ScreenWise, it's called, and she has a website with great information, great tips for schools and parents, kind of almost checklists of questions to start asking, and great conversation starters as well. And so I think those are two great places for parents and for teachers to go.
One of the pieces we've been doing here is talking about phones as though they're all created equal. Would you say, or does the research kind of point us to say, that there is a difference between having a smartphone and what my friends and I call a dumb phone? Is there a difference in having that around? And is that maybe a gradual release that you would say is okay?
I like to call it a feature phone.
Oh. But I like the alliteration there. That works out really well.
But so there's a huge difference between having like a feature phone and a smartphone. A smartphone really gives students access to the entire world. And of course, there are benefits with that because you are able to gather information and get resources and communicate easily. But there's also a lot of concerns with that because students are able to kind of usurp the filter on the internet in schools and get into things maybe they shouldn't be getting into, signing up for websites before they're 13. So a feature phone really limits what a student can do. Usually you can make a phone call and maybe send a text message, not even a group text message. And teachers need to be aware of the differences if they're going to be using it for academic purposes, because they have to be, you know, aware of things like data plans and income levels of families and what they're willing to allow their child to download or participate in. But parents and families also want to be aware that if they're thinking about a cell phone because of communication purposes, because they want to be able to contact their child for pickups and organizational purposes, that they may want to ask why they would get a smartphone, which is going to give them access to many things that maybe the families don't really want them to get involved in too early, versus a feature phone where they can make a phone call and contact their child or send a quick text message. And there's less opportunities for distractions on that device. So it's kind of maybe a nicer and easier entry way into the digital world. And once the child is proven responsible on a featured phone, then maybe as they get older, consider giving them more access.
So the last piece I would say is, what are the things that we don't know, or that where's the research headed, and what are the questions that we still need to kind of answer as we navigate this space?
I think the area that a lot of researchers are looking into now, it's twofold. One is the mental health issues. We're starting to see some research around students and the amount of time they're spending on phones and where phones are located and if they're using it at 2 a.m. And we're starting to see that there are some mental health concerns, but we don't know all of that because there are also some positives. There will be students who say, I didn't have a community in my face-to-face world, but I found a community through my, you know, smartphone, through groups or through different kind of social media. And that's been helpful to me. So we're trying to figure out, you know, what are the mental health kind of positives and negatives. So that we still don't know. We also still don't know the health of the brain as far as, you know, being so engaged in this small screen device all the time. So that's kind of one area that we're looking at and we don't know all the answers to. The second area, I think, is the area of of students still really don't understand a lot of media literacy skills when it comes to their digital device, and they have such quick access to information, unlike I did in the 1980s as a kid, where I actually had to look at the, you know, peer-reviewed and edited encyclopedias. Now students can just get lots of information and consume lots of information, but they don't know how to critically evaluate what they're consuming. And so they may be believing things they shouldn't be believing. They may be assuming things are real that are not real. And there's just not a lot of support for how schools are preparing students to be media literate. And so we're still trying to figure out how do we do that and squeeze that into all the other curriculum and content and things we're trying to teach in schools.
And what have you, how have you changed your mind over the last couple of years? Because I would imagine, as you said, as we started out this conversation, you were talking about what we didn't know and what we do know now. How has your mind or your opinion or your thinking on this evolved over the last decade or so?
Well, it's evolved quite a bit. It's definitely, you know, the more you know, the less you know. And in some ways, is the more I've learned about smartphone use, sometimes I feel as though the more apprehensive I've become about declaring it to be kind of this game-changing resource or tool. For me, a lot of what has changed in my teaching has been, I used to be the teacher who said, my students are tech savvy, 21st, maybe 22nd century students now. And so they can just have access to everything all the time because they have these amazing resources at their fingertips. And now that the research has come about around multitasking, about time on task, which I know we didn't talk about, but you know, the fact that students tend to not spend more than 10 minutes on a particular task with their digital devices before they get distracted, I've realized that my students cannot have devices out all the time and really fully participate and engage in what's happening around them and being present in the moment. And I need to help teach them how to self-regulate and how to kind of have some impulse control around these devices and in a world where we just don't have any impulse control, in order for them to kind of stay mentally healthy with the devices. So I've become much more trying to model how I would like my students to be. I've tried really hard to prepare my students to use the devices in ways that are educative, rather than just a sandbox approach where they have them and they're clicking around and playing with them a lot. I'm trying to give them more guidance and more scaffolding and supports, because I found that that guidance and scaffolding and supports is needed, as much as the narratives tends to say, oh, students can just figure it out on their own. They still need scaffolding and support to figure out kind of the academic use or to, you know, critically evaluate a resource online.
And has it shifted who you are as a learner as well? I mean, have you, without the audience of your students to be the model for, are you learning and using digital tools in a different space as you become more familiar with the research?
Yes, it definitely has. You know, in one way, in my personal life, I'm a parent, and I have my oldest is a middle schooler, and we actually chose not to provide her with a cell phone.
Oh man, but mom, you're the worst.
But you know, we had the conversation. We talked about why, and she's a great kid and she's okay with it. But I've also spoken with other parents too, and found that other parents are starting to kind of question getting cell phones and devices early to their kids, and they're seeing some of the consequences of it. So it's definitely impacted choices, not just I'm making professionally. You know, another example of my professional choice would be in faculty meetings, or when I'm in meetings at work, I close all my devices now, which I never used to do. I would have my device open and I'd kind of be listening and grading at the same time or checking email. And I realized I really wasn't present and I wasn't hearing what was happening in the conversation. And I actually felt like that was probably kind of rude to the people around me. So now I make sure I put away my phone, I shut my device. I usually have a notepad out and take notes. And later I might go and put it back on my device. But if I don't need to be using the device for the conversation, then I need to be actively listening and present in the moment with my colleagues.
And I do the same thing. I'm known in my district as a very kind of tech savvy person, right? And have had, you know, a ton of experience around technology. And then I walk into a meeting with just my notebook, and people oftentimes will kind of make jokes of, no, Mr. Technology, you got that new notebook in front of you, do you? It's just an interesting piece also to how people react to that in a meeting as well.
Yeah, I think that's, and it's interesting because I feel as though, again, 10 years ago, it was probably the people like you and I that were walking into meetings, opening laptops and taking notes while everybody was still using more traditional notes. And I was thinking, oh, this is the way to go.
Right.
And now we're almost reversing that and saying, actually, maybe we went too far and we kind of lost being present in the moment. And so we're starting to reverse that a little bit.
One last piece, and I know I said that earlier, but for reals this time, I wonder if there's also a piece about advocacy that's there. Are you familiar with the text Net Locality? Do you know that book at all?
No, I have not read that one.
So one of the pieces that one of the arguments that the authors, it's Adriana D'Souza Silva and Eric Gordon. And one of the pieces that they talk about is that digital spaces are also should be considered spaces, right? So you're in a physical room right now, but you and I are also in a space as we're doing this recording, you know, separated by miles, and that those are two different spaces. And I wonder if there's an argument to be made that if students are choosing to do something else, or if you and I in a meeting are choosing to do something else in that digital place, if there's a moment of advocacy there. You and I have probably both been in meetings that were kind of put on our calendars by someone else that didn't really have any kind of relevance that we didn't necessarily need to be present for. And then maybe that digital space is something we opted into because we could be more efficacious in those spaces too. Is there something to be said for that? Or like, yeah, oh yes, they can be distracted and these devices are distracting, but it also allows us to kind of be more judicious with how we use our time?
I think that's an interesting question. You know, I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, on one hand, yes, I absolutely agree because I have been there myself and I think, oh, this meeting is kind of a waste of my time, but I can knock out, you know, 10 papers that I can grade right now.
Right. As our students sometimes do in an English or math class.
Right. Exactly. So they are being efficient with their use of time. At the same time, they're being fairly inconsiderate to the people in the room who do think that this is really important. And one of the things that we talk about a lot in our class is kind of socio-emotional and the fact that even if it's not important to you, it's important to that person and respecting them for that. And so I do think that it takes away from that a little bit and it teaches students again to maybe be a little narcissistic.
Right.
I mean, you call it advocacy, but I almost think that it's that kind of self-involvement of, well, what I have to do is more important than what this person has to say right now. So it's okay that I'm kind of being rude and staring at my computer and nodding and not really paying attention. But I think that when they're on the opposite side, they wouldn't appreciate that if they're just looking at a bunch of heads staring at screens right, while they're trying to share their important, you know, facts.
Well, and one of the conversations I tend to have with my students and now working more with adults is the, our norms are going to be in this space that we are present. Can we all agree to that? And my assumption is if you are attending to a device right now, that you are attending to that because you are meeting needs. Because I've also had the experience where I needed to be in a meeting, but I also had kind of some sort of level of crisis going on with a friend or a family member that I needed to kind of be present there as well. And I needed to be able to switch back and forth, not to multitask because I would never. And I can't, but just to be able to navigate that space too. And so saying that in the physical presence of other people, I think sometimes has been helpful as well, right? To say, you know what? I'm going to make this commitment to close my device. I hope you do too. And I'm also going to have the presumption of positive intent that if you pull out your phone, it's because you need to.
Yes, I think that that's very wise, because I do agree there are moments where you do have to adhere to something. And I think being very clear and explicit with that information is important, to say, you know what, I'm here because I think this meeting is important. However, there's an emergency on this other end. I'm going to have to send a couple emails. I apologize. Whenever I do workshops or different activities, I actually start with asking everybody to close their devices unless it's absolutely something that they need to be doing in that moment. And I talk about kind of the multitasking issue and say, I just want everybody to be present in this discussion, so we're actively listening to each other. And I find 9 out of 10 times, everybody shuts their device, they put their phones away, and they become very mindful of what's happening in the room. So I think there's nothing wrong with saying, please do this, and reminding people to be actively present, but also recognizing that there might be some exceptions to that, and asking people, you know, if there is an exception, that's fine. We understand, but we do like you to be present.
Great. Speaking of being present, thank you, Liz Kolb, for being present right now and having this conversation. It's been truly a wonderful experience to kind of think these things through and understand the research. If people wanted to follow up with you as far as being in whatever new conversations you're engaging in, what kind of what channels through social media might they find you on?
Well, I'm really active on Twitter. So at L Kolb on Twitter is a great place to find me and to easily message me. I'm on there almost every day, and I love to hear what people have to say. And I've loved this conversation too, because I don't think there is a one size fits all. It's still very gray and we're figuring it out. So the more we can talk to each other about what's happening with our devices and with students, I think just the better off we will be.
Thank you so much, Liz. This has been a true pleasure. I'm sure we will reach out to you again to talk a little bit more. Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you, Zach.
Zach, I'm an ambitious educator, wouldn't you say?
Yes, of course.
I mean, I just really want to tell you about something I found that would be really cool for educators like me.
You just happened upon it?
Well, sort of. I want to tell you about ISTE certification.
Okay. Tell me everything.
It's really cool. It's a competency-based, device-neutral certification designed for ambitious educators like me.
Like you?
Like me. People who want to use technology to catalyze learning. It's really aligned with the ISTE standards, and the certification combines face-to-face and online PD with a competency-based evaluation. It's really awesome.
I can't tell you the number of people who are trying to catalyze learning, and so this sounds great.
I mean, you got to catalyze that learning, and you can learn more at ISTE.org/certification.
I got to go there right now. Bye.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, Amal. I have a confession to make after that interview.
Okay, tell me, I'm ready.
I think I'm wrong.
Oh my God, I had the same feeling.
Okay,
what are you wrong about? Let's just confess our problems.
Well, I had been saying, you know, keep the cell phones always, you know, keep them there. Keep them there. You know, how are they going to learn to resist? And Liz made me think something different than that.
Yeah.
What was your confession?
I just realized that I've not adequately taken my role as an adult seriously in this realm. I realized that I'm one of the chronic offenders in the world of this being a problem.
Tell me more about your childish behavior.
That's one way of saying it.
What I heard you say.
Yeah, that's not what I said. I enjoyed this interview, and I also was devastated by it, because I realized that a lot of what I'm doing is just not necessarily what the research supports. And Liz did a really cool job explaining this. But one of the big takeaways I had was that as adults, it's really up to us not just to monitor kids' usage of devices, but really to model for them what that should look like, and that we can teach these strategies actively. And I haven't really been doing that. It's been, you know, cell phones in the classroom or laptops in the classroom have been a source of frustration when they're not, you know, being used appropriately, but it isn't really something that I engage with as a teacher in the ways that would be really productive and useful for kids to better regulate their interaction with these tools.
No, mine was exactly the same. I wanted two big takeaways for me were, one, it wasn't even new. I know this.
I know.
Multitasking does not exist.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big one. I said that to my students and they were like, yeah, we know. And I was like, oh,
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And the little children shall lead them. But the second one, which wasn't necessarily connected to content, but that was really helpful and almost gave me permission, was Liz talking about how she has changed her mind over the course of this research and better understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
That was huge
for
me.
Yeah. She's super smart.
She is super smart. This is why we talk to other people.
Absolutely. I really liked how she talked about adults being really guilty of this too, and how we just don't even let each other know that we're paying attention when we're on our devices, or the way she talked about how, you know, how she has changed and evolved in her own thinking about this, but how she used to be on her device during faculty meetings and now she makes it a point to put it away. And I just really enjoyed that conversation and the way you described your notepad and kind of what that communicates to other people.
While I was talking to her, I wish you could have been there to see. My phone was within reach. I had my Fitbit on, which gives me a notification every time a text message comes in. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not even fully present right now.
I know. I had the same experience while I was listening to the recording. And I was like, oh man, I have picked up my phone a number of times and I just do so many of these habits really subconsciously. And it's something that I also need to work on regulating. And I would be a really excellent person to talk to students about the things I'm still working on and the strategies I use and the things I'm still struggling with. So yeah, it was a really enlightening episode. I really appreciated that interview.
I was trying to think about what I would do were I a classroom teacher right now. And part of what I came up with was I would set some challenges for myself and then ask my students to say, what are your challenges, right? So if they're in agreement with me that, multitasking doesn't exist, then saying, all right, what are we going to do as a community to be in community with one another and just see what we could come up with to challenge ourselves and hold ourselves accountable? Because I think a piece that I really appreciated was she turned it on me in the interview and said, Zach, you check your cell phone, don't you? And she knew because everybody does. And so that for me was a, okay, how would I do this differently in the classroom?
It's cool to think about how that could be done at the beginning of the year, but could also be, you know, a revisit or a checkpoint at various points of like, all right, how are we doing? We can reassess this, you know?
Right. Something along the lines of, we know each other's names, but are we really paying attention to one another when we're interacting?
Right. Right.
I think that the big takeaway for me was also, putting things away will only get us partway there, right? That it isn't just, okay, it's out of sight and then it's out of mind. But it is also, to your point, are we modeling? Are we having conversations about this? Are we talking about when it's appropriate to tune out and when it's not, right? So you and I have both had students who had family members who were in some precarious medical positions and having that phone out in their locker actually was the bigger distraction because they didn't know when something might happen and they needed to get a hold of folks. So there's that element too, right? So the personhood of it is still important.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's important for this to be a nuanced issue and for it to be something we continue to think about in really human ways.
I was not ready for her to change my mind. I was not prepared for that.
I really like how she talked about the use of devices being narcissistic.
Yes.
I thought that was a very interesting approach. And that I hadn't thought about it in that way before. Paying attention to others, if only to show them that you're not distracted, is a really interesting
approach. Right, to say that I'm intentionally paying attention to you. And to that note, let's see if I can make this segue happen. Thank you for listening and paying attention to us. Thank you to Dr. Liz Kolb for joining us for this conversation. This is hopefully – wait, Amal, would you say that we got to an EdTech answer?
We definitely did.
Even though we didn't necessarily want to hear those answers. Those are my favorite. Those are actually learning.
Step into my own discomfort here. Yeah.
I'm Zach Chase, and you can find me on Twitter at @MRChase.
And I'm Amal Gicknis, and you can find me on Twitter at @HelloHomeroom.
And as always, if you have your EdTech questions, you can tweet at ISTE, using the hashtag EdTechQuestions.